Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yeah, you're big time in the little people again.
No, you know what? Here's what truly happened, John. So first
twice
of all,
in the same week,
Bergman
I would just take
asked
the loss.
Me to come on the other day, and I said no, I can't. So that was not
okay.
A bailout.
Let's examine that. Why? What else do you have to do?
I did a podcast that day.
Okay,
that was the day I did the Michael Mando podcast with Nacho from.
So what happened today?
Better Call Saul. Today, I was sound asleep when it happened. My sleep schedule is all messed up. What happens to you when you can't sleep is the opposite of what happens to me. I sleep all the time. And in fairness to me, I did call in the last 5 minutes of the hour to try to catch on, and they wouldn't let me on.
No,
so
you called
I did
with
try
like,
to get on.
You called with like a minute to go in the show because I had to pinch hit for you. And they said, Mason's
really?
On? Well, we got to go.
But I did try. You got to give me points for trying.
Yeah, you're done with those guys.
Boy, what am I going to do with my
I was going to say, what the sad thing is, this is exactly what you wanted. You don't want to bother with that show.
What am I going to do with my days now that I can't go on Sedano show? Oh, hey, really
okay, but hey, forget
news.
That. Forget yeah. that. This show, this one you're listening to right now, is loaded. This is actually going to be, I think, one of the favorite shows we'll do all quarantine. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, 30 minutes from now, Will Ferrell.
Whoop, whoop.
One of the great comedians of our generation and part owner of the LAFC.
Yep.
We'll and then at 4 o'clock, Mace, we're going to do Fast Track. 5 o'clock Fast Track is moving just for one day to 4 o'clock because at 5 o'clock, we got the draft.
Yeah.
And we want to be able to bounce in and out of the draft because Mason's going to fail miserably on his 7th mock draft.
I've got both of our mocks lined up.
I spent a total of 3 minutes on my mock. Mason had 7 drafts, and I contend I will beat him anyway.
You went pretty chalky, although we have some
no,
major disagreements.
I didn't go chalk at all. I have Jerry Jeudy being like the third wide receiver. I have... I've got
Tristan Wirfs going really, really high.
Yeah, matter of fact, I have Justin Herbert going ahead of Tua. So I
have
go
Tua
talk.
Getting traded up to the third spot by the Chargers trading up to get him at 3. I think it would be a disaster for the Chargers not to trade up and take Tua.
I don't think they're going to.
I talked to
two people today that work either with or for the Chargers. And they both told me they're happy at 6. That they, you know, they'll just deal with what they get at 6.
Yeah, but why would they tell you the truth?
Well, but they had no reason to lie. I wasn't on the air.
Yeah, but if they knew you were going to be on the air, why would anybody talking about what the Chargers are going to do in the
draft?
Well,
I mean,
tell
by
the
way,
truth?
Just because these guys work with or for the Chargers doesn't mean that they're in the loop. Doesn't
Correct.
Mean that Tom Telesco is telling them. Like, for example, I work for the Lakers. They never tell me what's happening.
It's
I'm
true.
Always just speculating. I have no pipeline to the front office. So maybe these guys didn't either.
Hey, you know what else we're going to do today? Besides
interview Will Ferrell?
Yep. We are officially going to give away the very first bit of Rams gear.
Including, by the way, the penis hat.
It is not called a penis hat.
Oh, I got it. They sent me a picture of it today. It's just clear as day. Have you seen it, Lindsay? Have you seen the penis hat?
Yep. And I said, oh,
John's going
to be excited to see that.
Yeah. That. Now, what is the first thing you thought when you saw that?
Ram head.
Phallic
symbol. Rams.
Penis head. So I asked for one. I said, if you send me that, I'll proudly wear it.
I will proudly. That's the one I asked for, too.
I'll proudly walk around with a phallic symbol on my head.
And you know that
salute Eric Dickerson.
You know, they'll call you.
Yeah, well, that's true. I didn't think about that.
That's what I brought up with Lindsay today. You know, if you really see that penis, they're just going to call you, and you wear it on your head. There's an obvious nickname.
Yeah. That's true. I didn't think about that.
No, so we're going to give away some of that stuff. Also, you've got a bunch of ways to reach us today. We got some really cool jingles that came in on voicemail, 530-ESPN-710. You can reach us, hashtag Ask Mason and Ireland. You can reach us, 877-710-ESPN. And Lindsay thinks it's a mistake, but I have bravely opened my email to the people. You can reach, if you've got something longer or if you've got an MP3 that you want to send, you can email venicemace@gmail.com. venicemace@gmail.com.
And so
God only knows what I'm going to get from that.
Yeah, people are starting to, you know, people make such a big deal about the draft when the fact remains, Mace, that half of these 32 picks, on average, you go back over any draft, half of these 32 picks won't work out. That's how much of a crapshoot the NFL draft.
You know what?
Is.
I actually don't agree with you.
Well, it's factual. I mean, go back over any of the last five drafts.
It's not factual. That's not factual.
Of course,
what's
it is.
Factual is if you draft a quarterback, you have a 50% chance of getting it right. But if you draft an offensive lineman, generally speaking, you're going to get a productive player in the first round. He may not be a superstar, but you're going to get a productive player. You're going to get productive players in the first round. They may not all turn out to be superstars. But to say 50% of them are washouts.
Okay, so what year is this? This is 2020, right?
Right. What year?
So this is 2020, right?
That is correct. Still, right, so, I think it's been such a great year.
Yeah. And they had all this stuff, you know, all set up, you know, in Vegas. And
in
they were going to drop draft picks
and all that stuff.
It depends what your definition of productive is. Okay.
Right.
So, for example, so we'll go back 5 years to the 2015 draft. Number one pick, Jameis Winston.
Yep.
Okay. Has
didn't
been
work.
Productive.
I think it's fair to say it didn't work.
But has been productive, but not what you would want out of a number one overall pick. Number two, Marcus Mariota. Already been released. Number three, Dante Fowler. Good player. He's on his third team.
But great player. One that the Rams could have really used. I think a double-digit sacks last year.
Right, but on his third team. So not what you would consider the third overall pick in the draft. If you would say, okay, this guy's going to be good, but he's going to be on three teams in 5 years.
I don't think that's fair measure because he was able to go and get more money.
Right. So you would say Brandon Cooks has been a success, even though he's been on four teams.
No, Brandon Cooks has got a concussion issue.
But you got his money using your money metric.
Dante Fowler is better. He's more of an impact player than Brandon Cooks has been.
Mm, we'll see. He's now in Atlanta, right?
I forget where he's.
Yeah, I think he ended up in Atlanta. He went Jacksonville, Rams, Atlanta. Okay, fourth pick, Amari Cooper, on his second team. I think he's the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL
now. Yeah, he's great.
All right, the fifth pick is Brandon Scherff, an offensive guard for the Redskins. I'm sure he's fine.
But that's what I mean. He's productive, but...
The Redskins are terrible. The sixth pick was Leonard Williams, defensive tackle for the Jets. Has had issues.
But is a good player.
Okay, so based on that, I think there were three busts. You think there were two in the first six. Kevin White, seventh pick, wide receiver for the Bears. Absolute bust by any measure. Like I don't even know if Kevin White is still in the league. I mean, he didn't even play for the Bears. So just terrible pick. But the eighth pick, Vic Beasley, has been great.
Yeah.
You know, for the Falcons. Ninth pick is another offensive guard.
And we just don't know. I don't
right,
know.
Right. You don't know with those guys. The 10th pick was Todd Gurley.
Wait a minute. Todd Gurley, 2 years in a row, led the league in all-purpose touchdowns. You can't say Todd Gurley was a bust.
Okay, but wait a minute. You're so contradictory of your own line of thinking. You've said many times you'd never take a running back with a top 10 pick.
But the Rams did, and it worked.
Well, but now he's out of the, you know, he's gone.
Yeah, but I mean, but the fact is he had two years he led the league in all-purpose touchdowns. He may be out of gas now, but he had a productive 4 years in the NFL, which is about average for a running back.
Right, and if you keep going, I guarantee you half of these guys aren't going to work. Like, what would you say about Nelson Aguilar, who was the 20th pick in the first round that year, who we liked a lot in college?
I think he's been pretty good for Philly.
I think he's been a huge disappointment. If you have any friends that are Eagles fans, ask them what they think of him. They all thought that was a – if you draft somebody with the 20th pick, you're thinking he eventually can be a number one or number two.
He had a year where he had 104 catches and 1,300 yards.
Right, but that was 1 year, and he's been unable to repeat it. So they thought they had a number one receiver. I mean, he was the number one receiver at USC. By the way, did you see the
64 catches, 738 yards, and 11 touchdowns last year.
Hmm. Yeah, I think if you ask most Eagles fans, they would tell you he's been a disappointment. I mean, number one wide receivers now are all 100 catch guys.
But you're saying they're washouts. They're not washouts. They're productive players. I mean, you go back, you go through that draft. Arik Armstead, absolutely. Marcus Peters, absolutely. There are more contributing players than there aren't contributing players. It's not like the NBA. The NBA is a total crapshoot.
Right. By the way, I completely disagree with you. If you look at picks 20 through 30 in that draft, you haven't heard of half of them. There are some good ones like Shaq Thompson, and Breshad Perriman has had an okay career, but Philip Dorsett has already been moved twice.
Devin Funchess, nice one. Devin Funchess, nice wide receiver. Arik Kendricks, really nice player. But, I mean, I'm not qualified to judge offensive linemen. I just don't know if somebody's a quality offensive lineman or not.
Right. No, yeah, nobody does. We'll just assume
that. Off the top of my head, Rob Havenstein went in that draft. He's a nice player.
Right, but I'm just saying that everybody is super jacked up for the draft every year. There's a decent chance your team's going to blow it. But it doesn't matter because you know what the draft represents? Hope. Because you can't blow it on draft day. Whoever your team takes, except if it's the Jets. You know how whenever the Jets made a pick, they would all... the crowd would boo it no matter
what. Yeah, how are Jets fans going to be able to boo?
Yeah, how I wonder. Okay, so it's going to be televised on ABC, ESPN, and the NFL Network. Is there going to be a way, as we watch those, you know, bounce around between those three broadcasts, that we can gauge immediate fan reaction? Probably not, because there are no fans gathered, right?
Yeah, there are no fans gathered anywhere. Yeah, that's weird.
So
there
Twitter
are no
will
fans
be
gathered.
Twitter will be the way you react tonight.
Yes.
You know, like when your team, like, come on, you can't. Like, if whoever takes Tua, their team's going to be super excited. Whether
yes.
Tua goes, but we don't know if Tua can play.
Whether Tua's going to go at, no, I think, by the way, the quarterbacks, two of these four are going to suck.
Right,
two
I agree
four
with you.
It's, I mean, you got Burrows, you got Tua, you got Justin Herbert, and you've got Bryce Love. Two of the four going to be washouts.
And almost always are. Maybe three of the four. And it depends what... Okay, so what is success for Joe Burrow? That he leads a team to the playoffs?
Yeah. Leads a team to the playoffs.
If Joe Burrow has Andy Dalton's career, Andy Dalton has led a team to the playoffs and done well, is that a good pick? It'd be a little disappointing if he's Andy Dalton, right?
I think that would be disappointing if he's Andy
I think
Dalton.
He has to at least be... I'm trying to think of what a reasonable comp is. If you're going with the number one overall pick, I think he has to have a career that's at least comparable to Jimmy G, maybe?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jimmy G's been okay.
Right, but Jimmy G's been good.
They didn't win the Super Bowl because of Jimmy G.
Yeah, but he led a team to the Super Bowl, got him there. I'm trying to think, what's an acceptable comp for Joe Burrow if he does well? I'm trying to think, Ryan Tannehill, or would that be disappointing?
Without the Super Bowl success, take the Super Bowl part out of it, the two championships, Eli Manning.
No, Eli Manning's going to the Hall of Fame. That
yeah,
would be
but
a
he,
huge
but,
success.
But Eli Manning has not been.
How about this? I got
a good
one.
Not been a great regular season.
I got a good one. If 4 years from now, Joe Burrow has the exact same career as Jared Goff, that would be good, right?
Yeah.
Jared
Goff
led a team to a Super Bowl, made one Pro Bowl, has had his ups and downs, but he's been pretty good.
I think if you are a top 15 quarterback, that's a success.
Right.
I think that's an easier way. It's hard to draw a comp because I'm not an NFL scout and I'm not qualified to say.
No, but I'm just saying for a fan, like if you're a fan of a team tonight and your guy takes somebody and this guy turns out to be blank. This guy turns out all right, if Joe Burrow turns out to be Matthew Stafford,
that's a big win.
Yeah, although he's never been in the playoffs, he's had a great career.
He's had a great career. Stafford's you can only control playoffs, what you right? can control. You can't blame
Maybe
the
one
playoff.
Game.
Yeah, yeah, Stafford. But if you could get Matthew Stafford out of that pick, to me, that's a win. Matthew Stafford's had a quietly really solid career.
Right. Yeah, and it's thrown for a monster amount of yards. I'm trying to think of Joe Flacco would be a good comp for Joe Burrow. Like, if you have Joe Flacco's career, solid player, led his team to one Super Bowl, was a good 10-year starter before he flamed out. If you get that out of Joe Burrow, you'll be happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. I mean, here's the way I look at it. So, if with that number one pick, you want to make sure you get a guy who is a – you may not get a tier one guy. You may get a – if you get a tier two guy, that's a win. If you get somebody who's on that second level below, you know, the greats, if you get somebody who's top 15 in QBR and quarterback rating, that's probably a win. That's what you're – that's the low end of your expectations. The high end is he becomes a franchise quarterback. And, you know, I just don't – Joe Burrow's did it for 1 year. I just don't know. Tua, by all accounts, is – I mean, from listening to guys like Rex Ryan and Nick Saban and Dan Orlovsky, they all think Tua is the best quarterback in the draft. It's just a matter of health.
It's weird because if you listen to guys like Mike Tannenbaum, who's a former NFL GM, or Mike Lombardi, who used to work with Nick Saban in his front office, they're like way down on Tua.
Yeah. I think the Chargers are going to trade up and take him at three.
It'd be smart.
It would be smart.
But when's the last time the Chargers were smart?
It would give them a little bit of buzz. Justin Herbert doesn't give you buzz at number six. Tua at number three gets you buzz.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, again, we are working our way to Will Ferrell, who will join us at the bottom of the hour.
You're my boy, Blue!
I want to throw you something. A Dodger StubHub lawsuit question real quick.
Okay.
Coming up next. Mason in Ireland, Will Ferrell, bottom of the hour, NFL draft at 5 o'clock, 7:10 ESPN. Ha!
Hey!
Funny, Chris Morales. Funny. All right, so Major League Baseball has an official ticket reseller. It is StubHub. That is their official ticket reseller. And many businesses around the country have acted lawfully and ethically by providing consumers for refunds for events that will never occur during this pandemic. There are several fans who have now filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Los Angeles. According to the suit, well over 100 fans prepared to make claims and alleges the amount in controversy exceeds $5 million. The suit purports five legal violations, meaning that they are withholding the money for tickets that were purchased, despite the fact that the schedule will ultimately be different, may not happen, and may be played without fans. And these people think they should get their money back. John, should they get their money back?
All right, this is a very interesting lawsuit because technically, Mace, technically, these events have been postponed, not canceled. Even the end of the NBA season, which has now come and gone, those games may be rescheduled. So legally, did they just sue Major League Baseball, or did they sue other sports as well?
They also sued StubHub, which is their
okay.
So it's the league's official plus Ticketmaster, Live Nation, and Last Minute Transactions.
So it's for anybody who any entity by which you would have bought tickets to an event that has
Correct.
Not happened or the date has come and gone. I think it's going to be a very hard lawsuit for StubHub and Ticketmaster to win for events that have already. For dates that have already passed, like for example, I don't know how they win, but I also think that they have a pretty strict policy, and I'm sure it's there when you buy tickets that says in the event that your event, whatever you bought tickets to, is postponed, your tickets will still be good for when it is rescheduled. So that's a pretty good legal argument. Now, if your event's canceled, they probably have to refund it.
Right, but if I mean, we're talking about moving games to Arizona right. and playing games without
but if it's
fans.
Been, okay,
and,
so let me just ask you, from a legal standpoint, I buy tickets to a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert that was supposed to be on April 1st.
Okay.
All right? We'll just say it's Staples Center. I know it wasn't supposed to be at Staples Center. I'm just making it up. Staples Center announces the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert has been postponed. Not canceled. They use the word postponed.
Right.
If I bought those tickets under an agreement, which I agreed to when, you know, they say, do you agree with our policy? And you click OK. That says, in the event that a concert is postponed, Ticketmaster or StubHub, whoever we're talking about, maintains the rights to hold on to your money until that event is either canceled or rescheduled. If it's rescheduled, your ticket's still good. If it's canceled, we'll refund your money. How do I get around that?
Okay, so I'm in this boat because I owned, for the new SoFi Stadium, a pair of tickets to see Taylor Swift on July the 26th and a pair of tickets to see Guns N' Roses sometime in August.
Okay, now have those events been canceled or postponed?
They've been postponed.
Okay.
But I have been refunded my money for both of those events. And I think the one thing, you know, like, for example, the Dodgers are owned by a $220 million company called Guggenheim Partners.
Oh, if you're asking me, what's the ethical thing to do, I agree with you that refunding the money is probably the way to go. But if you're asking me who wins the lawsuit, that's a tougher question to answer, don't you think?
Do you think a sensible jury would look at that and say, yeah, I mean, come on, there's no fans. You don't know if those games are going to be played. People need money in their pockets right now. There are bread lines in the country, people trying to get food. People have invested money in entertainment stuff, and now they need it back so they can pay their rent and feed their families. I think a jury would find in favor of the fans.
It depends exactly what the fans agreed to, because there are laws that the jury supposedly has to follow. If in you know, that's how you won your lawsuit. You proved that you were violated specifically by the word of law. You said, here's what the law. I was, you know, I got to go watch your trial for a couple of days, and your lawyers argued brilliantly. Here's the law. Here's what happened. These guys deserve to be compensated. So if we go down that path, here's the law. You agreed to that if this event got postponed, Ticketmaster would hold on to your money until it is either rescheduled or canceled, and then you get an option. But right now it's in the postponement stage. It says here in black and white, that's what you agreed to. So I would find difficulty, if I'm on the jury, to say, while I'm sympathetic to the bread lines and the fact that people need money in their pockets and the ethically right thing to do would be to give them money, you agreed to it. The letter of the law says Ticketmaster gets to keep your money until this event is canceled or rescheduled. It neither has happened. I side with Ticketmaster. So I disagree with you. I don't think the jury would necessarily fine with them.
Shouldn't there be some type of like limit on the amount of time? Like, how do they just have an infinite amount of time to postpone something before they have to get refunds?
No, I would think that once all these sports are going to have to either announce a new schedule or cancel their seasons at some point, right? Like, at some point, just by nature of the calendar, it's going to come up. All right?
Like some major events,
Wimbledon just canceled. So if you bought tickets to Wimbledon, you already got your money back. The event's been canceled. The British Open's been canceled. But at some point, Mace, because of the calendar, they're going to have to make an announcement, right?
Right. That's been, by the way, that's been one of the most staggering things, I think, in just watching the way things played out. The number of people who are in line just for food. It's crazy.
As you know, I live right behind a Ralph's, and if you go there during peak hours, particularly on a weekend, probably 50, 60 people lined up out the door. And that's not counting the people that are in the store.
Right. Well, and those are the people that are able to afford to go to a grocery store.
Yeah, that's not food. A food network.
By the way, you know, I was also thinking, we don't get to see our moms. I was thinking about this. Tell me if this makes sense. Actually, we'll hold this because we should break because Will Ferrell's going to be calling in. But I want to ask you a question about that antibody test thing coming up a little bit later in the show. But Will Ferrell is going to join us next. Stay tuned.
Off the top of your head, the hardest you've ever laughed at a Will Ferrell movie, I bet you it's the same one as me. What's the first thing that pops into your head?
Anchorman.
Oh, I thought you'd disagree. Me, it's Battle of Ricky Bobby. I come at you like a spider monkey.
No, it's I am trapped in a glass case of emotion.
So
Baxter,
many.
How so did you many. Eat a whole wheel of cheese?
All Welcome right, to the gun show.
Exactly.
It's a burn. It's a deep burn.
Will Ferrell coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. This portion of Mason and Ireland brought to you by Lyman Healthcare, changing healthcare one person at a time. We are excited. Merrill, I was looking at a tweet. Will Ferrell is going to be joining us any minute here. Fantastic guy, part owner of the LAFC. You're my boy, Blue. And star of so many classic movies that have just one of the funniest people ever. One of
By the way,
funniest
Mace,
actors.
Do you know? Do you know where Will Ferrell is from?
No, I know where he went to school, but I don't know where he's from.
He's from a town that you despise. Does that help?
Houston?
No, he's from Irvine.
Irvine, the Irvinians.
And he feels the way that you do about Irvine. He said it was such a planned, staid community that there was nothing to make fun of or nothing funny. So they had to create comedy themselves because it was like the reason you don't like Irvine is because you hate planned community.
It's all planned, right? It's all right. There's nothing organic going on there.
So he Will said when he's little that there was nothing going on there. So he had to come up with things to make him and his friends laugh, and it produced one of the funniest people ever.
Yeah.
Because he's now that's the high school that's next to Corona Del Mar. Those are adjacent high schools. So if you
But your high school has more personality. Your nickname was the Sea Kings.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what university was. They might have been the Trojans. And then he might have gone from Trojan to Trojan. Because he went to USC.
Hey, while I got a second here, I want to mention that our draft coverage on 710 ESPN is brought to you by joinlapd.com. Visit joinlapd.com today to learn how you can make a difference in your community in a position that always remains essential.
And now, without further ado, joining us is the pride of University High School in USC. So you went Trojan to Trojan, right, Will? You were a Trojan in high school and a Trojan in college?
I only looked at colleges that had the same mascot, yes. So it was SC, I believe it was Troy State, a few others.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah.
How you holding up, man?
How are you doing? I finally made it on. I can't believe I've never been on the show.
Yeah, that is shocking.
How is your quarantine, Will?
My quarantine is probably similar to everyone else's in the sense that, it's fine. I don't really have anything to complain about. I do have a lot of appreciation for our teachers out there with three boys here.
Amen.
Trying to handle the schooling, especially the older ones who, as soon as you take your eyes off, they've switched from their class to some shooter game on the computer. I do feel like a prison guard with a baton, like, screens down, let's go.
It really is. It's like the hardest part of parenting in quarantine.
Yeah, and they're easily distracted, and, you know, it's... But all in all, you know, we're all healthy and lucky and all the above.
Good. Hey, I was thinking about something. What is the best perk about being a part owner of the LAFC?
The best perk, I would have to say, I'm still pretty geeked out about getting to go to any professional sports team's locker room is,
sure.
And so to get to do that, and I get to do that pretty much whenever I want. I haven't really tested it, you know, but I mean, guys are walking around naked and, you know, and sometimes they have clothes on. And, that's one of the fun things to get to bring, you know, friends and family to meet the players and do that kind of behind the scenes stuff is still, extraordinary. Love it.
You know, I got to tell you, the night that I got to be the honorary Falconer at LAFC was one of the highlights
of my
whole career.
And the Falcon did not attack you.
No, did not,
yeah.
Amazingly.
Yeah.
But afterwards, the fact that you talked to my mom has gone back and watched every Will Ferrell movie since then. She's like, he said he knows who I am. You made my mom's life with that.
Was she, after reviewing the film work, has she been like, I don't get it? I don't get how he succeeded?
So, you know what she struggles? She struggles a little bit with Anchorman. She doesn't quite get
Anchorman. Oh, you gotta
Anchorman.
Be kidding. Oh,
no,
that's
she
like
doesn't
the
quite
best.
Get it.
You know what? That one is a that's kind of a comedy litmus test. That movie. You either friendships are made or lost over that film.
Well, I got to tell you, I've told this story before, but I was on a date, and yeah. That's what we went to see that movie. And in the middle of the date, the guy looks at me and says, "You know, I'm going to meet you in the lobby after this is over." And I thought, there is no future here, none whatsoever, because I was laughing my ass off at the whole thing.
That same story happened to a good buddy of mine from SC. Actually, he went with his wife and another couple, and the other couple, about 30 minutes in, were like, "We're leaving. We're taking off. I don't get this movie at all." And literally just left, and I was like, "Well, this is going to be fascinating to watch."
Yeah, that's it. We're talking to the great Will Ferrell. Do you know when you're working on a movie whether or not it's going to be a hit? Like, if you're working on Elf while you're making it, or if you're working on Old School while you're making it, can you tell just by the script and the way it's going, or do you never know?
Elf might be the worst example of all time. Like, if there were futures on, you could bet on a movie when you start, that I would have lost tons of money on betting against Elf, because I had just come off SNL. I didn't have any other projects really. Old School had been shot, but it hadn't been released yet. In fact, they pushed the release, which is usually a bad sign. And so that movie was being held on to. And, you know, I had come out of SNL being known for probably, sure, there's sketches like The Cheerleaders, but there's other edgier stuff. And I just remember in New York sitting in my trailer on a break in my Elf costume, just staring in the mirror going, "This could be it, buddy. This could be..." And I'm like, you know, we shot all the exteriors in New York for the front part of the schedule, and I'm running around in yellow tights. I was thinking, wow, this is a huge swing, I hope it works. But I don't know. There's movies where you have a great time and it doesn't work, and there's other times where it comes together in a way that you never predict. So I kind of tend to follow the philosophy that you don't really know.
So do you think you were born funny?
I submitted myself early on. My parents were kind of like Marv Marinovich of comedy. They subjected me to genetic testing at an early age, and it was a program developed by NASA. And I was injected with a funny serum. Yeah, and, that's how it happened. No, I I describe myself as a conscientious class clown. Like I loved making my friends laugh, but I was also afraid to upset the teacher, which is a weird combination.
Sure.
So I would kind of push it to the, you know, to the point where I could tell the teacher was getting like, and I would know when to, I'd be like, too much. Okay. You got it. Next 30 minutes. I'm good. I'm listening. So I was a weirdo that way. I don't know. It was an easy way to make friends.
We're talking to Will Ferrell. Is it true that when you were at USC, you wanted to do what we ended up doing, that you were interested in sports broadcasting?
What you guys are doing was my dream job.
No kidding.
Well, maybe not literally right now.
yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I shot for radio, but I was thinking I would, I graduated in 90, so when did ESPN launch? Kind of
in the mid 80s, so you were right there, at the beginning.
I was watching, you know, if you remember some of those guys like Craig Kilborn and people like, you know, all those guys who were injecting humor into their broadcasts, I thought, wow, I love sports. That seems like a more legit thing than trying to break into the comedy world. Seems like more of a 9-to-5 job that's a little more stable. So yeah, that was my original game plan, and then I got into the real world and saw, no, you gotta it's the same sort of hustle, you know.
Right.
So you're obviously a Trojan and a Trojan football fan.
Yeah.
And if you ask the average Trojan football fan, they have very one-sided opinions about Clay Helton as the head coach. How do you feel about Clay Helton as head coach at USC?
Clay, I'm all in. All in on Clay. 100%.
A lot of people are. A lot of people, you know, like him. And he's been great to us. But as you know, Will, in that job, you got to win. Matter of fact, you have a good relationship with Pete Carroll. Do you still talk to Pete?
It's crazy. I just got a text from Pete today, like 15 minutes ago. He's coming up with draft clues. Like clues for the draft picks. He's like, you got any? I'm like, what, do they have to correlate to anything? He's like, no, nothing at all. So I'm just sending him random like references for my movies. I don't know if he'll use them. I don't know. He hasn't been back.
All right, so you don't have to tell us if you don't want to, but has he told you who he wants to take?
No, I have not heard. Yeah, it totally came up out of the blue. Pete Carroll, I have no idea. Yeah. I should have asked.
Yeah, I don't know. He might tell you. He might tell you. I was thinking about something that you've made so many people laugh. Who makes you laugh? Like, you've worked with all these funny people at SNL and in Comedy Beyond That, and you just did a movie with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who Mason and I both love.
Oh, my God.
Who makes you laugh?
I'm just a fan of so many people. Only because, you know, I came out of the Groundlings Theater on Melrose there, and I was just surrounded by a ton of funny people. I mean, I came, you know, the Groundlings kind of after me, you know, Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy and Sherry O'Terry, Chris Kattan, myself, Chris Parnell, Maya Rudolph, all these people, and I just remember thinking, God, these guys are so funny. I hope I can hold my own. But I don't know. I'm kind of all over the place with with who I like. I mean, Kevin Hart is just one of the funniest guys, and is a good public funny person in the sense that if he's in front of a crowd, he's ready to go no matter what, whether it's 5 people or 100 people. Where I tend to like walk on a set like, hi everyone, how you doing? Everyone's like, God, he's kind of boring. Kevin Hart's like, are we good today? How are we feeling? And so I'm like, I have to be more like Kevin Hart. That's
what was your audition for Saturday Night Live like when you auditioned for Lauren?
There were actually, it came in two phases. The first one I did, you just had to, it was very, I think, purposely vague, and you had to do you had to do a character of your choice. You had to do a celebrity impersonation if you had one, and a political impersonation. So I did Harry Carey doing a play reading.
Yeah.
which was so bizarre because there you are in the empty studio at Saturday Night Live, with in front of a camera and a lighting kit, and that's it. Like, he purposely tried to, you know, make it feel like a pressure filled situation. And so you're doing comedy in a void. So there I am with a bad wig doing Harry Carey. I think I did Ted Kennedy doing stand up comedy. I don't know. Very bizarre. And then I did this sketch that I'd done, The Growlings, and it was just a kid who was yelling at a barbecue, yelling at his kids to get off the shed, which ended up becoming the first sketch of our first season that year as a new cast. So I did those three things, and then they, a couple weeks later, there was a callback, and they wanted to see some more. But that was, those were kind of, I also did a sketch where I was a guy, in an office who was on a conference call who kept putting everyone on hold to get on the ground and play with cat toys like a cat.
That's our producer Lindsay's favorite. Oh, Lindsay, that's your favorite all-time Will Ferrell sketch,
right?
Oh,
Lindsay knows of the cat toy. Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's like one of my favorite ones. I just texted him and said it was hilarious.
I haven't watched it since I did it. It's got to be the weirdest thing to watch because there's no laughs to it. It's just silence.
But you've got, like, the mannerisms of a cat down to a T.
There you go, Will. If all else fails you, you can always do a one-man play about a cat. We're talking to...
Trust me. That's where my sensibilities lie. Yeah.
Okay, so we see you at a lot of sporting... I see you at a lot of Laker games. You obviously go to USC games. You obviously go to LAFC games. What's the best sporting event you've ever been to in person?
Whoa. The best sporting event, even though we lost, was the SC Texas National Championship game.
Yep.
That's what Mason and I always
say. That's so weird. John and I both, again, even though we lost, that was just a perfect, unbelievable sporting event to be at.
It was, that one's just so hard to describe. The cliche, you know, description is the electricity in the stadium, which is all you can say. It was just insane. And we were actually sitting next to Lance Armstrong, Matthew McConaughey, and this whole group of Texas people. And they were so ready to talk, you know what, but they never could, because SC would go up, then Texas would go up, then SC would go up, and the back and forth nature. And at the end of the game, everyone in just shook hands, and we're like, that was a heck of a game. Don't know what to say.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, that was a beautiful night.
We talk about that all the time. So are you optimistic we're going to see sports again, or pessimistic?
I am. We're going to see golf, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we got golf coming.
The pageantry.
That's a start.
Won't have to whisper now because there's no one to interrupt.
Correct.
It's just the golfers.
Do you think it's going to work?
I don't. I think we're going to be so excited just to watch people moving, even though it's just walking and carrying golf clubs, that I think it'll have all-time high ratings.
Yeah, probably. Well, the draft tonight might have all-time high ratings.
Exactly.
We had nothing else to watch.
Yeah, I hate to say it, and I hope I'm wrong, I think I'm more on the pessimistic side. I know.
God. Yeah. I'm praying, man. I'm praying.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the outside. We've been waiting a long time to get you on. We can't thank you enough for doing this. And most of all, we hope you and your family stay safe and that you can keep your son's computers on the assignments that they've been given.
Wait, what time is it? It's 3:45.
Right.
School day should not be over yet. They're in the backyard. Okay, I got to start cracking.
Hey, Will, thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Great to be on, you guys. You do a great job. I love the show, so it was fun to come on.
All right, thanks,
cool.
Will.
Thanks,
talk to you soon. All right, that's the great Will Ferrell. Boy, if he would have been a sportscaster, he would have just killed it.
Oh,
he
would have been great.
That's a severe underuse of his talent.
Yeah, no question. No question. Wow, that was cool.
Yeah, that's funny. Right when he's...
I was going to say, I don't think we've ever had him on before.
I've met him. He was shooting a movie called Daddy's Home with Mark Wahlberg at a Pelicans game in New Orleans a couple years ago, and I walked up to him from across the floor, and I go, hi, Will, my name is, he goes, John Ireland, how are you, man? He goes, you know, I'm from Irvine. You're from Corona Del Mar, right? He goes, I listen to you and Mason all the time. Like, he completely knew the show. Didn't he give you some of that when you met him at the LAFC
totally
game?
Totally. He's like, I said, Will, I'm a huge fan. He goes, no, I'm a fan of you guys. I've been listening to you for years. Yeah. And then when he met my mom, he said, he talks about you all the time. And my mom was just like so excited. So excited.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
It's funny what he said about Anchorman, because I have a friend who, you know, I'll tell you who it is during the break.
Yep.
Who one day I'm watching Anchorman for like the third or fourth time on a plane, and she says to me, that movie's not funny. And I went, what? That movie's not funny. That's just, you know, you all you idiots think that's funny, but it's not. And I'm like, I can't get my head around people who don't think Anchorman is funny. How is it not funny?
I think part of it is, if you're in the business, it's funnier than if you're not in the business.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Like all of us who have been, you know, around
very serious people.
Like, yeah. Self-serious Ron Burgundy types. You know, like, if you think about it, Lee Hamilton was a Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, a little bit.
He had that going on. All right, well, cool. Will Ferrell joining us. Coming up is 4 o'clock Fast Track. And then 5 o'clock starts the NFL Draft. It is a big, enthusiastic, exciting, positive Thursday. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.